welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to our third and final hour on this Friday, November 27th, 2015. We are joined by John Little. We're going to...
Omega Shock.
Yeah, Omega Shock.
You know, it seems like it's been a year since I've talked to John Little, and we had to actually give him two or three wake-up calls. He kept hitting the snooze button and said, no, I'm not taking your call, man. Get out of here. I ain't taking your call. Because he's halfway across the world, and he deserves his sleep, but yet we roused him. Folks, before we get to our guest, Mr. John Little, Omega Shock, a good friend of the program, and I just can't say enough good about John Little and about his research, his news analysis summaries and such. Boy, it's a treat having him on today. But before we get to him, I want to mention, folks, you saw what happened when I guess there were only 11 toasters for 35 people, or, you know, six flat screen TVs for 200 people, or whatever the case might be. You saw what was going on today in the so-called Black Friday, right? The fights, the melees, the shutting down the mile in Chicago with Black Lives Matter. Folks, you're going to be faced with supply disruptions. Guarantee it. So, get ahead of the game. Go to AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. Our partners in this radio endeavor, AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. Look, folks, please be prepared for what's about to come your way. If you're not, and I'm going to say this right up front, if you don't prepare, then you are no better than an infidel. I mean, it's scripturally sound. And now we trust in God, but we must. Utilize what we have available to us. And of course, American Survival Wholesale is our go-to shop for all things survival related, as well as healthmasters.com. Healthmasters.com for anything nutritionally related. In fact, Dr. Ted Brewer did a great job for me. Look at me. Look at me, folks. Look at me. Don't I look good? No, I'm just kidding. I feel really great in terms, physically. So I don't consider myself a diabetic anymore, and I'm not sure my doctor does either, and no medication, it's all natural. So that's healthmasters.com, and while you're there, sign up for the newsletter. All right, without any further ado, let's bring on Mr. John Little, who heads up something called Omega Shock. If you're not reading it, then you're missing out. John, how you doing, sir?
Hey, it's great to be on the show, and what an interesting week that we've had.
Yeah. Indeed.
Certainly. I was, all week, I sort of, as I'm reading and doing my research and things like that, I always sort of think, okay, so what am I going to write about on Friday? And I had a list of things that I wanted to talk about. In fact, Saturday really started because I end my research week on Friday, and I start reading the next week's bit of research, and we had a really packed week. And I was thinking, man, I had a lot to write about, and all the comments from the previous week's article, which was about the Earth not being flat. I mean, I don't know about you, but guys, the Earth is not flat. Now, that's not the reason why I wrote the article. I was writing the article just to kind of showcase the ideas and certain ideas and theories that are really impenetrable to evidence. Lots of ideas that kind of float around out there about how, whether it's this Jewish conspiracy or the Israelis are always wrong or evolution or just a host of ideas that there, no matter what evidence you propose or what you throw out there, nothing will ever be good enough to prove your point.
Of course not. No.
Yeah, so there's a lot of flat earthers out there. And yes, we can prove that the Earth is not flat. And no, we don't have to go out into space to do it. But that's okay. It's a different issue. So anyway, Saturday started off big. And, it was really this roaring start. And then Turkey shot down a Russian airplane. That was
this
on Tuesday.
Okay. Now we're talking. Now it's a party.
Yeah, now it's a party, exactly, because, and in fact, I was kind of tootling along until one of my readers DRG, by the way, DRG writes to me and says, John, it's going to be an interesting Friday article. And I think, yeah, what was this about? The he talks about this shooting down of this SU-24. And I think, yeah, oh, man, I really don't want to write about that. I've got so many other things I want to write about. But no, we have to write. We have to talk about this because this is huge. And I don't think too many people really spend, I don't know if they spent too much time over in the United States talking about this. I know that they didn't spend too much time over here in Taiwan, in Taipei, talking about this. But this is big. First of all, just to sort of set the stage for those that may not be aware, and I think most of our listeners here do understand what's going on. But in Syria, Russia has really been really hitting ISIS hard, and of course, not just ISIS, just all of the rebels, pretty hard in Syria. And what they've been really doing. And this is the thing that no one else has been doing, not the French, not the Americans, not anybody else, which was hitting the source of income for ISIS. And they've been doing that by attacking the refineries and the tanker trucks. Now, I don't know about you, but I've been hearing over the years that the number one way you want to actually destroy terrorism is shut off the money. If you want to destroy the terrorist, just shut off the money spigot. And because terrorism shrivels up and dies if they don't have money coming in. That was the case for the PLO. It was the case for the IRA. It's been the case of every terrorist organization in the world. Someone is funding the terrorist organization. And if you want a great book on it, Benjamin Netanyahu wrote an excellent book on it, and now that's a guy who knows terrorism because he's ex-Special Forces. The Prime Minister of Israel is an ex-Sayeret Matkal, which is the elite Special Forces unit of Israel. He says turn off the money, and it's true. Turn off the money. So the question is, where is ISIS getting their money? And part of the reason comes from all the oil sales that ISIS is engaged in. Well, the question is, who is ISIS selling the oil to? Well, I can tell you who, and it's Bilal Erdogan, who is the son of President Erdogan, I guess some people would say, of Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Bilal, what a name, Bilal, he's making a lot of money. His father is obviously making a lot of money, and his father wants to be president for life in Turkey. In fact, he's been interested in changing the constitution of Turkey to make sure that he is president for life. And I don't know if too many people have been following events in Turkey, but they had to have a re-election, had to redo their election because the AKP, I think it's the AKP, didn't quite get all the votes or enough votes to make President Erdogan president for life. Well, that's just kind of the background. Well, anyway, so Russia has been attacking the group that Turkey has been supporting. And why is Turkey supporting this group, ISIS, Jabhat al-Nusra, any of the other rebel groups? The reason is that Turkey wants the Syrian regime taken out of power. They want Syria destroyed. Well, or not, at least not destroyed, at least more amenable to the demands of Turkey and the Gulf Arabs, because there's a gas pipeline that they want to have run from Qatar up through Syria into Turkey, because Turkey wants to be the natural gas hub for Europe, or at least one of them. Well, the thing is, there's that, because, okay, to put the other side of this in, Syria had made a deal with Iraq and Iran to have the natural gas coming from Iran. So there's two competing natural gas pipelines that are kind of in the works. Syria chose the Iraq-Iran pipeline, and Turkey decided that they didn't like that and launched or helped launch the civil war in Syria in 2011. So basically what happened was is the Iran-Iraq-Syria pipeline was announced in 2011. It was signed. The deal was signed in 2013. And, of course, it's no coincidence that the civil war started in 2011. Anyway, so Russia comes in to help with the effort to destroy the rebels. Partly, by the way, because of General Soleimani goes to Moscow and offers Moscow a deal. If they will come in and offer air support, then they will bring in their big guns, the Quds force and more Hezbollah fighters and even more Iranian fighters to help fight. Russia jumps at the deal. They move into Latakia and I can't remember the name of their air base. So that's kind of the background. So anyway, Russia was interested in avoiding any misunderstanding, the kind of misunderstanding that happened on Tuesday when the plane was shot down. So they have been providing the United States with the mission profile for all of their bombing missions, all their air support missions. Basically, they're showing them where the flight path is going to be, when the flight is going to happen, where the planes are going to be at any moment in time. So basically, there is no misunderstanding possible. And I'm assuming that their IFF transponders, their information friend or foe transponders that basically broadcast the identity of the airplane so that there's no friendly fire. So these aircraft are undoubtedly broadcasting this information. So there can be no mix-up as to what these aircraft are, where they are, and who they are. So now we find ourselves looking at a shoot-down. Russia has had provided the flight path of this particular aircraft the week before. Russia gave the United States this information, and the United States passed this information on to Turkey. And then Turkey decides to shoot the airplane down. Now, what Turkey said about this this information, and by the way, this is important because we're going to be talking a little bit about why they may have done this. There is a little bit of Turkey that kind of juts out into Syria, and it's nearby what you would a normal flight path for a bombing run, I think, to Aleppo. And Turkey said that this airplane, this Su-24, which is mostly a kind of a multi-role fighter bomber aircraft, but it's not very good at sort of the anti-air role. Anyway, it flew over this 2-mile stretch of Turkey that kind of juts out in a finger into Syria. It spent at best 17 seconds, and by the way, in Turkey. And right. This is from the Turkish side of things. This is not the Syrian or Russian view of things. This is what they said. This airplane spent 17 seconds inside of Turkey, so Turkey shot it down. Now, I don't know about you, but that, it was on its way out of Turkey by the time the pilot launched the missile. In fact, it could not have been shot down inside of Turkey. It had to have been outside of Turkey when this plane was shot down, if you only take the Turkish side of this story. The Russians said, look, there's no way that our plane would have gone inside of Turkey because we know that they were looking to shoot us down.
Yeah. The pilot who survived said that they never breached the Turkish airspace, nor did they receive warning.
Right.
Verbal or visual.
Right. No. The guy that the both pilots, one of them was a lieutenant colonel, the other was a captain. These guys are experienced pilots. They would not have traversed Turkish airspace, period. It just doesn't make any sense. So the point is that, the point that the Russians are making is that this was an ambush, and they're laying the blame squarely in the lap of the United States. This isn't just a Turkish shoot down. This is an American shoot down as well.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. So
in NATO.
And people better understand the significance of what happened. I mean, you do, and
we talked about it earlier in the week. You know, Article 5 of NATO.
Well, I mean, World War III, right? I mean, this is it.
Yeah,
it hasn't been declared, but certainly the actions are there.
Well, the thing is this: Article 5. Only of NATO only applies when you are attacked, not when you attack someone else. And so there's two implications here. One, of course, is, as we talked about, we're talking the beginning of World War III.
Right.
It's just one more in a long chain of American actions. We had the 2008 Russo-Georgian War. We have the overthrow of the Ukrainian government in Kiev. We have the U.S.-sponsored civil war in Syria. Everywhere where there's a Russian interest, America has been involved in attacking Russian interests. In fact, people of uncertain parentage in Washington, D.C., are interested in breaking Russia up into its component parts. It's not without cause that Russia refers to herself as a federation. It has its individual pieces that could fly apart if they aren't glued together. So, America wants to actually break this Russian federation up so that Russia is no longer a threat to American hegemony. This has been going on for a very long time, ever since the Soviet Union fell apart. And America made promises to the Soviet Union that NATO would not extend itself up to Russia's borders. Well, now NATO has extended itself up to Russia's borders and has now made threats to Russia's existence. And if I was Vladimir Putin, I would not take this sitting down. In fact, when the Ukraine was overthrown, I would have immediately launched efforts to decisively neutralize America. If I was Putin, I would have done that immediately. I mean, the only question in my mind is how he would do that, and the only thing I can think of is an EMP strike on the United States.
John, let me ask you this. What about what we did, the CIA, did to the Soviets in terms of their economy? Have you considered that?
Well, yeah, that's... Okay. And this is not going to be lost on Putin himself. Although I think that my understanding of Putin is that he's more of a nationalist than he is... maybe a communist. And yes, it can't be lost on the Russians of America's efforts to destroy, you know, undermining the ruble, the attempts to balkanize Russia even as they were falling apart, how difficult it was to hold Russia together in the midst of the Soviet Union falling apart. Yeah, all of those things are not going to be lost. And in fact, Putin says himself that one of the greatest tragedies was the fall of the Soviet Union. Again, I don't know that necessarily because Putin may be a communist or not. I don't know. It's a little hard to tell. We haven't heard anything communist coming out of Putin. In fact, actually, if anything, we've heard a little bit of the opposite. He appears to be a fairly devout Russian Orthodox, member of the Russian Orthodox Church. Having said that, the patriarch of the Russian Orthodox Church is an ex-KGB agent. So,
and there it is. Yeah, I, you know, John, I got to tell you, I get afraid. I'm not afraid. Maybe that's the wrong word. I get concerned about people who take Putin into and elevate him to, I don't want to say a deity status, but elevate him in terms of his morality and his Christianity, because we know KGB, where we, I mean, we know his stock. We know more about Putin, perhaps, than we know about Obama or Santoro, you know.
Actually, there was probably a point in time where some of us would have elected Putin over Obama. I mean, Putin is, I mean, I have a lot of respect for Putin. I mean, he's a nationalist. He loves his country, it appears. There's a lot to admire about him. But make no mistake, he's not a nice guy.
Right.
He's cheated on his wife. He's, I mean, there's rumors of a child by someone he's not married to, a Olympic, I can't remember, it's an ice skater or something. He stole the Super Bowl ring of a coach that he visited or something in the United States or something. Some interesting stories.
That going kind back of, sometime, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he kind of said, that's, oh, I like that, I'm keeping it. He's basically mafioso type, okay? And, you know, there's a certain amount of honor among the mafioso. I mean, so there's something to respect and admire about Putin. But make no mistake, he's a really tough guy. You don't want to mess with him, and we have been.
Right.
He's really, I mean, if he was a Yeltsin who was an alcoholic and a person who had limited morals, let's just put it that way, you could have pushed him around. Yeltsin was a weak leader, the guy before Putin. If it was even Medvedev, Putin and Medvedev have been switching roles for the past 12, 15 years, yeah, he could have been maybe pushed around, but Putin, you can't. He's a very smart guy. He's a very canny player of the game of chess. Don't play games with him. And so the question is, what is Putin going to do in response to this shoot down of this Su-24? And I can tell you something I think, and other people can maybe, you know, provide. In fact, I always welcome comments, because some of my readers do an excellent job of providing alternate explanations to what I provided. But one of my ideas is that Putin is going to do the one thing that Turkey doesn't want Russia to do, and that is support the Kurds.
There you go. Yep.
About 20% of Turkey itself is Kurdish, and that's the southeastern part of Turkey. The one thing that you just don't want to do, if you're visiting Turkey, never say anything about the Kurds, and never say anything about the Armenian genocide. That's something you never want to say if you're in Turkey, because that will get you thrown in jail, both of those things.
Right.
So Turkey is deathly afraid of the Kurds, so Russia will be doing everything it can to help the Kurds. So there's that aspect,
but that's, and I don't mean to interrupt you, but that's, isn't this tit for tat with what we're doing in Syria? So America, it cleans up, or, you know, wipes out Gaddafi in Libya, and funnels weapons and even trained terrorists up into Turkey for deployment into Syria. Turkey's a player in this. And so the United States, Israel, France, the UK, and all the intelligence agencies breaking up Syria and polarizing Syria, basically, well, just causing the civil war. So Putin, looking at that, his response to that would be, and in addition to the shoot down, would be to do what you just said with Turkey, and that's to back the Kurds. So while we're backing the Muslim terrorists in Syria, he's going to back the Kurds in Turkey, right? I mean, is that kind of like the Okay.
Well, yeah, I mean, the interesting thing, of course, who's the losers in all this? And that's going to be the Syrians themselves, the Sunni Syrians. You'll notice, by the way,
yeah,
the Alawites. Well, no, well, okay, let's divide things up, specify the different pieces. The leadership of Syria is Alawite, which is they come from the coastal area of Syria on the Mediterranean coast. The Alawite area actually is divided between Turkey and Syria itself, and the Assad family has been more than a little upset with Turkey because half of the Alawites are in Turkey. So there's that element of tension. Now, the thing is this. You have the Alawites, which are a minority in Syria. You have the Kurds. You have the Christians. You've got... I'm trying to think if there's anything else. But in between all of this is the Syrians. And the Syrians are being hit by both sides. And you'll notice that when Russia came in to help the Syrians, where did they set up? They set up in the Alawite areas. Where are they spending most of their time supporting Syria? In the Alawite areas. So Russia has essentially come in to defend the Alawites and leaving the rest of the Syrians flapping in the breeze. A few airstrikes and a few ground support missions have happened around the Damascus area, but there's not really been that much. So Syria is being slowly crushed from many different sides. Now, and the Americans have been giving some support to the Kurds. So all these elements are kind of pushing Syria apart. And to be fair, there's an element of justice to this. I don't like the fact that the Syrians are being hurt. I mean, I don't like it. I don't like it at all. I like the Arabs. My wife and I have had a wonderful experience with them. I have zero animosity towards the Arabs. They are a very emotional people. They have interesting traditions. But the Syrian government made some really stupid decisions way back even in the 40s. They had an opportunity to be at peace with Israel. They chose not to. And that was a bad decision. Okay, so everybody should know my bias is towards Israel. I lived there for 15 years. So you can take some of what I say with a grain of salt. But there is a limit to Israel's involvement in Syria. Basically, they're involved in Syria in the Damascus area, the southwestern part of Syria. Right. Israel has also had, I've heard rumors of Israel being involved with the Kurds, Israeli Special Forces units helping train Peshmerga in northern Syria and northern Iraq. I'm not completely certain about that. There's a limit to how much Israel is going to be involved in that. It's kind of a touchy thing. I have my doubts about Israeli involvement with ISIS. It's not impossible, but doesn't make a lot of sense to me, especially since Saudi intelligence, the intelligence services of the Gulf Arabs, as well as Jordanians and others, would have more input. Take that as you will.
Right.
But here's an interesting point that I want to bring out, and this one is fascinating. It comes back to Isaiah 19. Isaiah 17 is the prophecy that talks about the destruction of Damascus and how it is taken away from being a city. And as we look at what's going on in Syria, we it's easy for us to turn to Isaiah 17. But one of the things that we don't often think about is Isaiah 19. Now, what does Isaiah 19 talk about? What is that focus? That focus is Egypt and the drying up of the Nile, the Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam. Okay, so that Isaiah 19 is in process of fulfillment. And what does Isaiah 19 talk about? in the end, after all the horrible things are going to happen that Isaiah 19 talks about, it talks about Egypt, Israel, and one other entity being in a confederation where there's three, it's a political entity of three parts. And that other entity is the Assyrians. Not Syrians, Assyrians. And in Hebrew, there's a much greater difference in the word for Syria in Hebrew is Aram. And the word for Assyria is Ashur. So the Assyrians, the ones who came and attacked and destroyed the northern kingdom of Israel, the ten tribes, they will be in a confederation of three parts with Israel and Egypt. That's Isaiah 19. And what are we seeing right now? We're seeing the growth of the Kurds. And if you do a search for who the Assyrians are, you find out the Kurds. Now, I had some people comment on that statement that I made in the article and saying, well, yeah, I'm not so sure about that. You know, I've heard that the Medians, the northern, the people of the northern part of Iran, that they are the Kurds. It's an interesting question. Who are the Kurds? But as far as I've been able to determine, and I invite anybody who has any interest or any input on this to really tell us who the Kurds are. But it appears to me that the Kurds are the ancient Assyrians, and that as the Kurds rise up and take power and control for themselves, that they will become in confederation with Israel and Egypt when all the dust settles. It's an interesting thing to see as the possibility of this prophecy being fulfilled. And in fact, I don't consider it a possibility at all. I consider it an inevitability. So that's an interesting bit of mind-blowing stuff to think about. The fulfillment of prophecy as Syria falls apart, as the Kurds rise, as the Russians possibly, and I think that the probability is very high. I can't think of anything that is more damaging to the Turks than the rise of a Kurdish nation state. Because, again, 20% of Turkey is Kurdish, and the Turks have been persecuting the Kurds. In fact, what was the biggest threat that kept President Erdogan from becoming president for life was a Kurdish affiliated political party that had gotten 12% of the vote in Turkey. So this is a big threat.
Right.
We're going to see this threat rise. We're going to see Russia involved in it. We're also going to see a few Turkish airplanes shot down. We had the Russia now publicly brought in. In fact, they were very careful to release pictures of this S-400 anti-aircraft missile system, one of the most, if not the most advanced anti-aircraft missile system in the world. And that S-400 missile system can reach into Turkey as well as into Israel and shoot down aircraft. And I don't think that Turkey has anything that can stop it. We also have a Russian missile cruiser that has parked itself just off the coast of Syria and is ready to shoot down any Turkish aircraft that threaten Russian aircraft. We could have some very interesting times in the not-so-distant future. So, that's the big deal. So we have many different... let's bring it back to a more personal area. America. Russia has laid the blame for this shoot down in two places, Turkey and the United States. So I guess the next question is, what does Russia do to the United States? And, I just finished my third edit. I've been thinking of a second edit, my third edit of Ezekiel's Fire. And that means going through chapter 3, which is, to me, the most depressing chapter of the book. I cannot escape the possibility that, no, the inevitability. It's not a possibility. It's an inevitability of the destruction of the United States. I mean, from two different directions. One is the threat that America has continually, for the last several years, been threatening Russia continually and incessantly, threatening Russia at every point possible. Russia's got to respond, in because Russia, survival for Russia is a very personal thing, as you can imagine. But even more so, Russia's history is one of an incredible struggle to survive. If you know the history of Russia, then you know that Russia is one of the most heavily invaded countries on the planet. The Mongols, the Polish, the French, the Germans, everybody and anybody has been invading Russia. And Russia has spent a lot of its effort trying to defend itself. It lives in a, you know, it's in the middle of a very flat plain. So Russia is going to treat these attacks against Russia very seriously and going to try to neutralize America. So that's one aspect of this. The other aspect is the New World Order. If you want a New World Order in where everybody is essentially equal, or should I say everybody are just is just a bunch of peons with the rulers at the top, you can't have a superpower. All the superpowers must be crushed so that there's nothing to challenge the leadership of the New World Order. And so there's no room for an American superpower if there's going to be a New World Order.
That's right.
So America must be destroyed. Now, I don't know, and by the way, just to be very clear, the New World Order is not unified. They have factions. They fight with each other. They kill each other off with regularity. I mean, this is sort of how the Illuminati works. I mean, it's how they keep the new blood rising to the top so they don't, you know, ossify, they don't solidify and just kind of collapse. That's how Satan works. The factions that Satan controls, they're always fighting, and, you know, the best dog wins. So the New World Order is fighting with itself for who's going to be, you know, the top dog, the ones in power. And the American part of the New World Order is fighting with all the other parts, and America wants to be the rulers. Or should say the American faction of the New World Order. They want to rule the world. Well, they're not going to be allowed to. And the Bible says that the fourth beast will arise. You know, Daniel talks about a fourth beast. Revelation talks about the beast with seven heads and ten horns.
Yep.
So the thing is this, the issue of the beast with seven heads and ten horns, the seventh head, remember, the seventh head is wounded as unto death.
That's right.
And then, now I have to be careful here because I want to say that the seventh head revives and becomes the eighth, which is the beast, but the Bible, Revelation, doesn't exactly say that. So I have to be careful here. But the point is this, I believe, my interpretation is that the seventh head is wounded and is resurrected. Doesn't exactly say that, but it's my interpretation that it does mean that. My thing is this, I believe that, unfortunately, I believe that that's the United States. I can't be dogmatic about that, but it appears to me that's the case, especially since I see that Russia is interested in doing something like that out of a sense of self-preservation. And there's one other aspect that I haven't touched on in terms of the fallout from this attack on this SU-24. we have NATO visibly backing Turkey. So they're saying basically that Turkey has a right to defend her territory. It wasn't right that the Su-24 traversed Turkish airspace. The United States was very quick to back up the Turks. But Europe is going to have to ask itself a very important question. Do they want to be pulled into a conflict with Russia? NATO, which
is... That's a good point, yeah.
So the thing is this going to cause the fracturing of the NATO alliance? The United States is solidly behind Turkey in this shootdown of the Su-24. Oh, they are solidly behind it. However, there were indications that not all of the Pentagon is necessarily behind this because we had a leak in which someone inside the Pentagon was releasing information saying that the flight path of the Russian aircraft did not enter Turkish airspace.
Right.
So we don't have an exactly a unified Pentagon. And we'll see about whatever fallout comes from that. But the point is, the United States is behind Turkey in this, but Europe might not be so ready to defend Turkey's right to shoot down Russian aircraft, even if it is hard to believe that they were in Turkish airspace to begin with. Is France willing to go to war with Russia over this? Is Germany? I mean, we have already have fractures in the quote-unquote coalition to, well, let's see, the brain cells are still, aren't quite awake yet. What's the word for, the sanctions. The sanctions regime that was imposed on Russia, you know, the Italians weren't able to sell their tomatoes, the Greeks weren't allowed to sell their olives, machinery, right. Germans weren't allowed to sell their machinery to the Russians. I mean, money has been lost by Europe because they weren't allowed to sell products to Russia. And Russia fought back by saying, hey, you know, we're not, you know, you're not going to buy, you're not going to buy our stuff. We're not going to sell you. We're not going to buy your stuff. Europe is not quite happy with the sanctions regime with Russia. And why are the sanctions involved, imposed upon Russia? Because of the perceived Russian support for the rebels in eastern Ukraine. Well, of course, I think it's real support. I'm not sure how... I'm not sure that the Russian how many Russian soldiers were involved in this, but nevertheless, there's a perception that the Russians were supporting the Ukrainians of eastern Ukraine, Donbass, and such.
Right.
So Europe is having to ask itself more and more questions about whether or not they want to toe the line with the United States. And so this is going to be an interesting couple months, I think we're going to see. Is, are we going to see more fights between Russia and Turkey? What does Turkey do in response to maybe a Turkish airplane shot down? By the way, there's a natural gas pipeline that goes from Russia through Turkey. What happens
there
to that?
There we go. Exactly. And you've got the Syrian oil and gas structure as well. So, I mean, go ahead.
By the way, the interesting thing, and I'm not sure if I brought this out or clarified this, but you noticed that when the Russians started attacking ISIS and they attacked their oil refineries and their 1,000 oil tanker oil trucks, oil trucks. Why wasn't the United States attacking these facilities before? Why did it take the Russians to do this?
Yeah.
Interesting questions.
The statistics thrown out by the Pentagon on the number of attacks against ISIS in the last year or year and a half is in the thousands, yet we've seen no results whatsoever, either in pictures or video footages or even in numbers of anything. You know, Russia comes in and starts attacking, and you start to see results. And then, you know, as we drop, before we drop the bombs, I think it was on, 116 gas tankers, you know, the leaflets that were dropped,
yeah,
warning the
in advance, yeah, the advance notice. Yeah.
And that's just ridiculous. It's, I mean, I don't know. That just rubbed me the wrong way when I heard that.
Yeah. So, and then the other thing is Turkey recently jailed two reporters, or an editor and a reporter, of a newspaper that was reporting on the Turkish involvement, basically arms shipments going into Syria, mm-hmm, and oil shipments coming into Turkey. So, we've got some interesting lying going on.
Well, John, you said something, and I think people really need to understand this. The Illuminati, the powers that behind the powers, the ruling families, there's infighting. And I think people really need to understand the complexity. A lot of people want to say, well, it's Putin versus Obama, and it's that clear cut. All right, it's either Putin or Obama. Well, okay, to simplify it like that would be, I think, in my estimation, a mistake. So we have to look at this in a little bit of a different light. I think that we have to look at this as if there are multiple boards of a multidimensional chess game taking place. And often, when we talk about the Illuminati or the powers behind the politicians, I believe, too, you're talking about a fight for who's going to be on top. And oddly enough, and I'm going to mention this once, and then I'm not going to mention it again, if you really want to get into the studies of this, the esoteric meaning of that, there's a sexual connotation and an astrological connotation to that. And I'm just going to, because I can go down a huge, lengthy rabbit trail on that, and I'm not going to do that. But I think you'd agree, though, that there's a lot of, shall we say, a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff going on. And that you indicated that as much.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I have to be careful not to identify the person I'm going to talk about. I have a relative who has passed away. But this relative told my mom, and this relative rubbed shoulders with people that were highly involved with the Illuminati. And I found out much later on after he died that he was something of a Satanist of some kind. I don't know exactly who or how much, but he was. This guy did deal with the Illuminati. And the one thing that this person told my mom is that and he didn't actually name names. And when I originally heard about this, I was just like, I didn't put the pieces together myself, but he says, they are looking for someone to unite them. Mm. And that's something interesting. They are fractured, they are divided, and they're looking for someone to unite them. So as we look at these plays for power, these conflicts that are going off in the world scene, there are forces at work behind the scenes, and they are fighting each other. They're not, you know, they're not a monolithic entity. So, I'm not sure how far to go with this. I think we do have to be a little careful about, you know, chasing fuzzy rabbits down rabbit holes.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think, yeah, that's a good point.
And how far do you go? I mean, it's
how far? Yeah,
like my thing with the issue of the Flat Earth Society that I talked about last week. we had, you know, that's a conspiracy theory too far. Now, on the one hand, if you take everything on just a purely surface area, you're going to miss everything, I mean, almost everything. There's a fine line in between all of this, and I don't know exactly where it is. Although, we can say this. If you see something, that something is probably real. It's like when I was sitting in Israel for 15 years, I could tell you what I saw. So there are some things that, if certain things don't quite fit, as I'm teaching some of my students in one of my classes, think critically. Think critically. You know, ask yourself, cui bono, who benefits?
That's right.
Ask yourself, you know, if something doesn't make sense, start digging at that point. You know, I discovered that 9/11 wasn't the attack that I thought it was because I realized, wait a second, building number 7 could not collapse by itself.
All right.
So there are these issues that when they don't make sense, when something doesn't fit the narrative, start digging at that point, and you will discover. Like, for instance, one of the things that some people have issues with Steve Quayle and the issue of giants. I don't. I don't. And the reason why I don't is I saw a video of some guy holding the head, a skull of one of these giants, the Paracas skulls, and I thought, yep, that is a giant. Yep. And that is not human. So look for these opportunities where you see that a part of the narrative doesn't fit and start digging at that point. I don't think that we will ever really find the complete truth until after we get passed through some of this. So everybody, please prepare for the worst moment in time in human history, especially those of you living in North America. I am deeply concerned with what's coming.
John, I know you don't have a crystal ball, but what's your gut telling you? I mean, we got a year left, we got a year and a half, 2 years, we got 10, we got 30. What do you think? I'm not going to hold you to it. I mean, what's your sense telling you?
Within 2 years.
Yeah, that's a consensus based on everybody I've been talking to.
The thing is this. I'm taking this from a biblical standpoint. I mean, I'm looking at, again, who is Gog and Magog? Whoever Iran is in alliance with. Remember that. I don't care whatever theory you have. It's got to be someone that is friendly with Iran, because Iran is a part of Gog and Magog. Gog and Magog is being set to happen as we speak. I don't think it's going to happen next year, but... it is somewhat possible, but I don't think it's going to be next year. It's probably going to be the year after, or whatever. We're going to see some more events that are going to make it clearer to us. But Gog and Magog cannot happen if America is still alive and kicking, because America would never allow it to happen. That is something very important that people need to remember. Gog and Magog spells doom for the United States.
With that, John, we are at the end of our show.
I can't believe we're out of time. John, you got up early. You live on the other side of the world. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
What a wonderful assessment.
Wonderful assessment. Yeah. You're going to need Prozac after this one, guys. Again, it's omegashock.com. I have a new Ezekiel's Fire PDF available, so click and read.
All right. Thanks, brother.
Thanks for your time. You have a great day. Enjoy that beautiful weather out there.
Will do.
Oh, that'll do it for us this week, folks. We have a great week lined up for you next week. Billy Crone, Stan Dale, Nathan Leal.
Yeah, and among others to be announced. Want to give our thanks to Mr. John Little, Omega Shock, as well as
Matt Peterson.
God bless. Till next week, stay safe.
This is the Global Star Radio Network.